Hello, everyone. This is Water Cooler Chats with Franklin Vagnone. And as I like to say, I'm a self-proclaimed Southern gay Italian dyslexic dumpster diver. I'm here today with Christian Coates, who's Director of Education and Visitor Engagement at James Madison's Montpelier. And welcome, Christian. I'm so glad you're able to take my call.
Oh, thanks for having me on the show, Frank.
No problem. Now, my first question is always, I'm really interested in how everyone self-identifies, whether, you know, it's in relation to culture, social situation, ethnicity. Go ahead and tell me how you would self-identify.
Well, I think, you know, having listened to a lot of your water cooler chats already, I think, you know, what I need to say is that I'm a straight white male, but I don't really identify as a straight white male. And in other words, it's not something that I spend a lot of time thinking about, which probably, you know, is indicative of the fact that it's a privileged position. I identify more as a dad and a husband, as a brother or son, as a country guy, as a paddler, as a grieving ex-smoker, as a storyteller and a story lover. You know, that's how I think of myself. I don't often think of my, you know, my sexual orientation or my skin color.
And given what you just said as a kind of self-identification, what's your response when you're sitting in a museum conference or someone makes a point in a meeting about the problem with leadership in museums is primarily the straight white males, and you hold a leadership position in a very prominent historic site? What's your response to that, and kind of how do you see your place within that notion of leadership in the museum field?
Sure. You know, being at a Southern plantation home, we don't talk about that question very often, because looking around the room, you know, almost everyone is a straight white person of some sort. And I remember being at ASLH last year in Kentucky and looking around the keynote room and thinking, my God, we are one white field, you know. So it's not a question that comes up often, but you know, I think that being in a position of leadership allows me to use my wonderful open-mindedness to promote other stories, you know, and to sort of maybe do battle with the more traditional, conservative, straight white male viewpoints that are out there and that have dominated the field for so long.
Well, that's interesting, because what you're kind of suggesting is that the category of straight white male isn't really full enough. It's not rich enough, because you can be straight white and male and still be dedicated to investigating diversity and things like that. Is that one of the points you're making?
Oh yeah, I mean, I can think of a half dozen people on this staff alone that are you know, straight and white and mostly male, a few women as well, who have dedicated their careers to promoting the African American story at Montpelier and in other places that they've worked as well. So yeah.
So Christian, a lot of people will say that the staffs at historic sites are not diverse themselves. They may be primarily white, and that some of those leadership positions need to be filled with people of color. What's your response to that?
It's definitely a problem, and it's definitely something we'd love to see. We'd love to have more African Americans on site and on staff. But I think the problem lies in sort of a desire amongst the African American community to want to work here, and I think also Montpelier's ability to reach out to that community, you know, and have that networking. We do our best. We have a number of people, you know, who are in the local African American community and in the Charlottesville and Fredericksburg communities, and even nationally at some universities that we reach out to when we have jobs open, for both our staff and our visitors, you know, working at or visiting a plantation site is difficult.
Yeah, and I would say that some people say that the community, people of color community, would be interested in historic sites if the historic sites told their narrative. And I'm wondering if the sites and the communities are not catching up with one another. Because, you know, I just took a trip to Montpelier and then also Monticello, and my experience is that both of those sites, particularly yours with the reconstruction of the South Yard, are really dedicated and substantively moving toward telling the authentic, accurate story of the slavery narrative. I just wonder if the community and people of color need to somehow be made aware of the sincerity of that effort. Or what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think we are trying to tell that story with sincerity, especially at the bigger sites. I mean, you know, a B movie is always going to be a B movie, right? And you're only going to ever be able to expect so much from some of these smaller plantation sites that are still stuck in the 19th century. But, you know, at places of more national prominence like the Hermitage and Monticello and Mount Vernon and here at Montpelier, you know, I think we are trying to tell these stories honestly and openly and with more sincerity.
I do acknowledge that there may be some sites that haven't moved past it, and those are kind of perpetuating the stereotype.
Yeah, I mean, I could rattle off a number of them, but I don't want to do that. I don't want to throw anybody under the bus. But
right.
But like I said, I think many of the larger sites are really, you know, doing their level best to do a much better job at telling that story openly and honestly. And you know, for Montpelier, we have spent about 15 years really building a network with our descendant community and inviting them to the site and talking to them and getting to know them and asking them to weigh in on interpretive decisions and advise us on the direction that our interpretation is taking. You know, we're asking them what are they seeing that they like, and what aren't they seeing that we need to sort of help us, you know, in our public programming.
And that's interesting because it leads me to really where my mind goes next, and that is for a person of white privilege who's in a leadership position in the museum field, what's your suggestion of something we can do right now, today, tomorrow, that really starts to move us in a direction of dealing with, if there's the inequality of people of color with white in the staffs as well as the narratives, what's something that you think we could do right now?
Well, you know, as a field, I think we have to tell all of these stories openly. You know, what Elon was saying about ghettoizing the black story at historic sites, I think is very true. And those stories have to be, you know, integrated into, you know, whatever the main tour, not have it be a separate thing where, you know, you can take the main tour and you don't have to hear about the black story, but, you know, if you want to hear the black story, then you take a separate tour, you know, integrated into the whole narrative more completely. But also I think, you know, we have to do a better job of talking, of creating exhibits and tours that create empathy amongst the visitor group that comes to our sites, right? Which is largely going to be, you know, middle class, older white Americans, right? At least that's who's coming to the plantation site. So, you know, if we can sort of re-educate our visitors and maybe open their minds a little bit, then we create empathy, and you know, we create a maybe create a more inclusive society, and that will, you know, funnel all the way down the line, and that will get into, you know, into family dining room tables, and it'll get into living rooms, and you know, those conversations will be had around the Christmas tree, and you know, and then more people will come to these sites, and more people will gain that empathy,
yeah.
And that'll just trickle down, and just create a more open-minded society where, you know, hopefully 10, 20, 30 years from now, we have a more even playing field when it comes to diversity in the field.
And I will say this, that I'm someone that I would consider fairly open to diverse opinions. I would consider myself fairly open to understanding marginalized populations. And after my visit to Virginia with the two sites I just mentioned, I walked away with new information that was really meaningful to me. So even for someone who considers themselves knowledgeable in what's going on, your research that you continue to do just keeps bringing more and more to light. Talk a little bit about the continued research you were mentioning about with the descendant community, how that's constantly changing and evolving at Montpelier.
Well, I mean, that's one of the hard things about this field, right? I mean, not everybody is posting everything they're doing on a daily basis to Facebook or Instagram or LinkedIn, right? So we don't always know what's happening at our sister sites until it comes to fruition, which may be 2 years or 3 years or 5 years down the road when a project is finished. So I think we have to keep in mind that just because we don't see something right at this very moment, and we want to see something right at this very moment, and we're used to instant gratification, you know, may not mean that an institution's not working on something or have plans for something. In Montpelier's case, you know, we've been working for about 2 years now on a new exhibit about the African American experience at Montpelier, which will explore not only the story of the individuals in our enslaved community here, but it will also look at the ideology that supported slavery in the 18th century, as well as how the Constitution was designed to protect the institution of slavery, and how the institution of slavery has left a legacy in our country that we still see today. I mean, on a daily basis, the events of last week are just, you know, terrifying and horrible, and just kind of drive the point home, right? I mean, it's still with us. The boat that came over in 1619 and docked in Jamestown was a rock thrown into a lake, and the ripples are still with us today.
I'm interested in your opinion of something. I feel pretty strongly, and you know this, that taking today's newspaper and kind of figuring out how it relates to your site and to the museum field is a pretty important thing to do. And just recently, I know that there was an op-ed piece about making historic sites similar to the Hamilton Theater piece, where ethnicity and race are completely separated from the first person representation that they're acting. So, you know, that the Hamilton play, in fact, Lin-Manuel Miranda has said that he wants these parts to be played by people of color. There's been a move to suggest that, for instance, Colonial Williamsburg and other historic sites that do first person productions, that they should open up those productions to a diversity of populations to actually be actors in that.
Right.
You know, that's an interesting thing to think about. Do you have any thoughts? Maybe not particular to your site or any site, but just any thoughts about that move, that thought of moving in that direction?
Well, I mean, personally, I love it. You know, I mean, if we want to get over the race thing, right, then we need to be willing to accept that idea, right, that black people can play white people and white people can play black people, and that it can be interchangeable, that we're all just people, right? And what we are playing or what we're representing in this role is another person from another era. So really, what difference does our skin color make if our skin color truly doesn't make a difference? I think there is a counter argument to that that I heard just recently, actually, where I was talking to another guy in the field who I have a lot of respect for. But he was saying that he thought that African-American narratives should be narrated or portrayed by African-Americans, and that, if the barrel maker at Williamsburg was an African-American, then the guy who's making barrels at Williamsburg should be an African-American. So, I think they're different.
I will say this, that are radically different. I was in the room when that statement was made, and let's make it clear that the person who said that was an African American, and he was suggesting that it was important, just as you were saying, and he also was suggesting that the job as an actor should go to an African American playing an African American. So it also had an economic issue associated with it. And we had a really good conversation about that, but it's one that I feel like is for another, water cooler chat. Cause I think it's a really interesting thing. And I think for me, it was kind of, interesting to hear it coming from an African American, historian who was very adamant that those positions should be played by African Americans. And I think it's just a conversation that is kind of new right now, to the first person kind of actor field in his historic sites.
Right. I mean, to me, it doesn't feel like that's a good way to get us all thinking about a greater American story that is a little bit more colorblind.
Yeah.
How do you have an inclusive narrative if we keep trying to be exclusive?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, it's a really good conversation. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Christian, thank you so much for talking with me. And the reason why I like these water cooler chats is because we're really not going to find the answers to our problems if we don't ask these questions. And these are difficult questions. And Christian, thanks for being on the hot plate right now and trying to answer some of these questions that are hard to do. Thanks a lot.
Hey, Frank, the other thing is that not only are these hard questions, but, these are questions that nobody's ever asked before. So, kudos to you for asking them and trying to find an answer.
Thank you, Christian. All right, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Great talking to you. Bye-bye.